This is the Best of the Adam Gold Show podcast, brought to you by Coach Pete at Capital Financial Advisory Group. Visit us at capitalfinancialusa.com. This is the Adam Gold Show.
Game against Coastal Carolina in November. Hello! I want to have those games later in the year where a team that is not competing for championships is playing against a team that is competing for championships, and it is going to be a test of how much these players, these coaches, these teams can stay focused on the matter at hand. Because it's college football, we only get 12 regular season games a year. I'd like to be able to see who can maintain an elite level of play all the way through.
Little wings from Rusty on that one. Very nice. It's the Adam Gold Show. Dennis Cox on the ones and twos, although that is a Rusty Helser production.
By the way, Hayes Permar, huge wings fan.
There's nothing not to love about wings, man. Paul McCartney, and not just chicken wings, but Paul McCartney and wings. That's a pretty great second act right there.
Oh, I thought you're talking about the TV show, Wings.
That's also a great show.
That's what Hayes
Crystal
likes.
Bernard, Wings. Very good, right? Very good show. That show lasted a long time. I got no problem with that. I mean, it's. I think it's more of a cult favorite than like a, I don't know, it's not like a Seinfeld thing, right? It's a good show. Good show, Wings. Did you ever watch Monk?
I do know of Monk. I never really got into it, though.
Tony Shalhoub, right? Mm-hmm. He was pretty good in that. All right, let's get to the wall of sound, shall we?
The wall of sound is a function of this studio. There's no doubt about it.
You want to hear some football-y things? Then you need to hear Baker Mayfield after yesterday on Taking It One Day at a Time.
For me, it's just getting better one day at a time. You know, it's I have to get better, and if I'm playing my best ball, things will take care of itself and just helping each other out. I mean, the main goal for this team, which is, it's pretty well understood, is we're trying to win. No matter who's in there, we want to win football games, and that's the main message.
Man, gosh, the football people eat that up. Mm-hmm. I don't know if you remember this, Dennis, but Russell Wilson's rookie season, the Seahawks end up getting to the divisional round of the playoffs. They lose. He drives the team down the field, take the lead against Atlanta, but there's like a minute and a half left.
Yeah.
And then Matt Ryan takes him back down the field, and the Falcons win. I think this is the season the Falcons went to the Super Bowl and then blew the 28-3 lead to the Patriots.
No, it was before that.
You think it was before that? Mm-hmm. Okay, you may be right. Like, my sense of time is not always great. But anyway, Wilson, after that game, the disappointment of the game, Russell was like exuding confidence about next year, and he basically machine gun fired football cliches at all the writers.
Yes.
And you can feel the warmth washing over them. Very Baker Mayfield like right there. Very Baker Mayfield like. He did make a mistake yesterday, but he recognized his mistake. Spartanburg is just different.
Yeah, I'm pretty stupid for wearing a long sleeve and pants, so. But I'm stubborn, so I had to learn for myself.
There you go. Today, with the heat index probably near 300, he opted for shorts and short sleeves.
I mean, I could get you want to protect your skin against the sun. I'm sure that's,
yes,
you know, a thought.
That's true. And a lot of these long sleeve shirts are actually, they're not going to, they don't like hold the heat in. Mm-hmm. So you can wear them outside. But yeah, he had dark colors on yesterday. Although the top was like a blue, but he had the pants were dark. And why are you wearing pants? That's just a silly idea. All right, Chris Lowe from ESPN. We heard earlier in the program from Marcus Freeman, new Notre Dame coach, about the debate, I guess, over independence or joining a conference. Chris Lowe recognizes the big picture when it comes to conference expansion and that it's all about Notre Dame.
Listen, the wild card in all this is Notre Dame. And Jack Swarbrick, their AD, has made it pretty clear that they're going to sort of sit and wait, see how everything shakes out, what the landscape looks like, you know, a year or two. But I think that's the that's the school out there that once they decide where they're going, and I think the Big Ten makes the most sense, then that really may sort of start that domino effect.
All right, couple of things that we need to know. Yesterday, Kevin Warren, or it was probably a couple of days ago, Kevin Warren said all those things at Big Ten Media Day about, you know, we're going to be aggressive, and he was basically scaring the world into thinking the Big Ten is going to expand again. I find it hard to believe that the big that even the four schools the Big Ten was discussing, but at least that were written about in the article, because who knows what the Big Ten is actually doing, Stanford, Cal, Washington, and Oregon, that those four schools will simply dilute everybody's take-home pay. You know, we are going to get, I don't believe that Oregon, Washington, Stanford, and Cal will add so much to the inventory of Big Ten football that it will increase the value by another $500 million a year. Combined, because in order for them to pay for themselves, it's probably going to have to be in that range. Mm-hmm. No way. Those four schools ain't doing it. So if one of them had to be included in order to get USC, that's one thing, but that's not the case because UCLA is already there. So I don't see the Big Ten expanding. I think Kevin Warren was simply saying, we're going to do what we can, and Notre Dame, we're ready for you. But I just... Notre Dame is also bound by grant of rights, by the way.
They are.
So, it's just something to think about. And who knows? We talked to Eric McLean earlier, and McLean thinks that, like, if a school like Clemson felt like they had to go, they would figure out a way to do it. Damn the grant of rights. Well, we'll see. See what happens with that. Right now, legally, Notre Dame would have to go to the ACC if they were going to go to a conference. I also think that for them, it would probably be a better move. Because remember, they're not making this move because of money. Notre Dame's been leaving money on the table. Mm-hmm. They're not going to the highest bidder. What would the ACC take be if Notre Dame was in the conference full time?
Higher.
Much.
Yeah.
And remember that Notre Dame will be special in the ACC.
Mm-hmm.
They will be special. They will be a very good member of the Big Ten. That's different than being special. They will be. All right, moving on. Last night, Citi Field in Queens, it was the Mets beating the Yankees 3-2. Four times last night, one of the best pitchers in baseball, Max Scherzer, met the best hitter in baseball, Aaron Judge. Three times he struck him out. Max Scherzer, after the game, relishing the moment.
I love pitching in these situations. I love pitching in this atmosphere. You know, you got to want the ball in these type of moments, and you got to go out there and face the best. I'm glad the Yankees, they're obviously one of the best teams in the AL for a reason. It's fun to have them come to your park, and you get to face them, and you want to beat them. You respect of how good they are, the threats that they have up and down our lineup, and you want to go out there and, that's what you measure yourself against is the best. You don't want to measure yourself against the worst. You always want to measure yourself against the best.
Well, I mean, if I measure myself against the worst, I look better.
Yeah.
If you measure yourself against the best, sometimes you lose. Max Scherzer did not lose that battle last night at all with Aaron Judge. The final at bat, he struck him out the last three times he faced him, in the third, the fifth, and the seventh. And in the seventh, after walking DJ LeMahieu to put runners at the corners with two outs in a 2-0 game, and Judge is coming up. And it's funny, my wife asked me a question about this because they were talking about it during the broadcast, but it was just one of those moments that really makes baseball so special. There are dramatic moments in every game. Sometimes they happen earlier in the game. This one happened in the seventh, where fourth time through the lineup, you think, man, how is Max going to do this again? and he just got nastier. And the slider that got Judge was just tremendous. Here's Aaron Judge after being swept by the Mets.
You know, probably the biggest takeaway is we got to just stay strong. You know, 15 games doesn't determine a season. And, you know, we still got a great ball club here. We can go the next 15 games and, you know, win 12 out of 15. And then people are asking what's going so right, you know. So it's just stay the course, you know.
They're a great team, the Yankees. That is just a great team. They missed Giancarlo Stanton in the series. They still have some pieces that I don't think are quite clicking the way they have been. LeMahieu hasn't been what he was. Gleyber Torres hasn't been what he was. Aaron Hicks is not the same player. Stanton's having a great year. The Yankees have really good pitching. It was a good series. I mean, I think the first game of the series kind of a little sloppy. Mm-hmm. I think both teams are just a little bit sloppy. The Mets managed to win it 6-3. I mean, most of that damage was done in the first inning. It was 4-2 Mets after one. But it's two really, really good baseball teams.
By the way, did you pick up in the Scherzer quote or soundbite the ping pong match being taken place in the background?
No, there was ping pong in the background.
Oh, you didn't hear this?
No.
I'll play the okay. center.
Yeah, you know, this is, you know, they're obviously one of the best teams in the AL for a reason. It's fun to have them come to your park and you get to face them and you want to beat them. Irrespective of how good they are, the threats.
Yep, heard the ball hit the absolutely. Heard the ball hit the ground.
That's tremendous.
Yes,
you gotta love ping pong.
I mean, how do you measure yourself to other ping pong players?
By height.
Okay.
On that note, Scott Meshaw, Irish Examiner, is going to join us.
Adam Gold in studio with my man, Coach Pete DeRuiter with the Capital Financial Advisory Group. We are talking retirement. Coach, let's say I have more than $1 million balance in my 401k.
Congratulations.
Thank you very much. How can that actually come back and bite me?
Well, because, and this is a thing that we it's a mirage. You see mirages. I've ridden in the desert before. You see what's water ahead, but it's not there. Well, your financial mirage is thinking that that total balance in your 401k or your IRA is yours. We have two people that want to get a hold of it, two uncles, Uncle North Carolina and Uncle Sam.
Right.
Both of them are going to do some damage to that balance. Depending on what kind of other income you have, you could lose 40% of your value. So if you're looking at $1 million IRA, maybe it's only worth $600,000 to you. So how do we get around this? Well, you don't get around it because you end up in jail if you try to do that.
You
can do tax planning to minimize the effect of taxation into the future. The tax train is coming, Adam. We need to make sure to minimize the effect of the derailment of our financial accounts. And for the next 10 people, we'll do it at no cost or obligation. Put together your very own tax and retirement plan.
800-661-7383 or text Adam to 21000 for Coach Pete DeRuiter.
Tomorrow, round one. That's right, round one tomorrow of the latest Live Golf Challenge series event at Trump Bedminster. Bubba Watson, who announced yesterday, will not be in the field. Can't wait to see what team he's going to join. Apparently he's going to be a captain. That's pretty good, going in week four of Live and becoming a captain. They really wanted Bubba Watson a lot. We might talk a little bit about that. Scott Meshaw, Irish Examiner, Global Golf Post, joins us on the Adam Gold Show after traipsing about the United Kingdom for the better part of the last 3 weeks. I want to start there. I want to start in the UK. Was it harder on the British press that Cam Smith won the Open Championship, or was it harder on Rory McIlroy?
You know, there was actually applause in the media center when Rory holed out that eagle shot on Saturday. And I looked at some of my colleagues because I was on that side of the press room, and I said, I missed the memo. Are we supposed to cheer in here now? But yeah. There were a lot of down faces in the media, as well as Rory McIlroy, who I think was more stunned than everything else that he just couldn't make anything happen. And you know, Cam just, you know, blew by him like a freight train.
Cam was great. Look, I have nothing against Cam Smith. He is an amazing player. He's fun to watch because he's all over the place. He's a little bit unpredictable. He will do things like he did Saturday, like try to baseball swing his way out of trouble, which got him into more trouble. But he recovers because he is a savant with the putter, and ultimately that was the difference. Rory didn't hit it close enough But really, he had plenty of opportunities to make putts, and they didn't go in. But I am curious, because the more of you're closer to that group of people than I am. You know, I speak to you. There's like five or six people in our industry, in your industry, that I speak to on a regular basis, so I kind of get their feelings. But there's so many more people who cover the sport of golf. Rory has been very popular for a long time on his own. But then you throw in this year and how Rory has been the face of the sport. And I don't even want to say the morality of the sport, because I don't want to go there. But he has been the PGA Tour's biggest, you know, cheering section. Has that
absolutely
explain how that dynamic works from the press room's perspective here?
Well, I think it's pretty obvious that, I mean, while the LIV Golf has certainly given us something to write about, and it's interesting and people like reading it, I don't think in general. Most people like the fact that it's tearing golf apart a little bit. I mean, you know, this is the biggest disruption the sport has ever had. And I think, you know, in that regard, it's not a very popular, movement, if you will. So Rory being that dynamic personality who has stepped forward and really taken it on his own to try to save the sort of the legacy tours, and the competitive nature of it, and the way golf has always been, and the way the yardstick that, you know, greatness has been measured by is winning on these tours and winning major championships and things like that. You know, they're chasing Tiger Woods and Sam Snead with most tour victories. They're not trying to chase dollar signs,
right?
Which is what the LIV Golf is. So, you know, I the fact that he has taken it upon himself to be that guy just makes him that much more popular with the media, with a lot of fans as well. So, you know, we kind of thought he seemed like the Destiny's Child to win this 150th Open Championship and put his name on as a St. Andrews winner of that event, and sort of saving golf in the process against all the LIV people.
Yeah, and look, it was tough in my house. I will admit it. I have admitted it. Normally, I am a consumer of all things post game, whether it's live from and reading everything. And when it was over, when Rory didn't chip in on 18, I'm like, I've seen enough. I don't need anything else. I still have not watched any of the post. I haven't watched any of the post final round coverage. That one hit hard for me. I've always been a Rory fan, but it was an important one, I thought. And look, he's going to win. I think he's going to win plenty more majors. I'm not worried about him. But that was the one I think he won. Maybe he wanted it too much. Is there something, Scott Misha, Irish Examiner, Global Golf Post, is joining us here on the Adam Gold Show. Is there something the PGA Tour can learn, though? Not in the formats, not in the shotgun starts, not in the three rounds, not in those silly gimmicks, but in some of the ways that they are just doing things a little bit differently elsewhere, the team competition. Is there something the PGA Tour can learn from that they can use, even copy, to make their tour a little bit more, give us something else to think about?
I certainly hope they do, and I think that's one of the criticisms many of us have had about the tour through the years, is that they've not really tried to be innovative in the kind of events that they do. And you know, when they add something, it's generally just another short field event, 72 holes, metal play, that kind of stuff. And the European Tour, now the DP World Tour, has been more creative trying to do things like that with the with the European Sixes. Events and stuff like that. And I do think there's room for some different formats. There, I do think that, you know, the team concept could be good if expanded through the whole tour, you know, for a season long type thing. You know, there's ways to do that. We've tried to get them to do something different with the tour championship and make it more compelling than just a 72 hole event that's now handicapped. You know, that didn't make it more interesting. That made it less interesting to me.
All it did was give a guy a couple of strokes that he doesn't really deserve because he played well weeks before.
Right.
I don't understand that. You know, it should be a level playing field, but they could do something else. They could pare it down, breaking, you know, get down to have a head-to-head thing for all the money on a Monday, you know, on Labor Day. There's a lot of different things they could do, and I hope that they realize they need to do more now. They can't be stayed and stay the same.
What's going to happen 4 weeks from now when the final putt is holed in at East Lake in Atlanta and the FedEx Cup season is over?
Well, that's going to be, I think September is going to be a very hard one for the PGA Tour, because I think you're going to see a lot more names and a lot more prominent names possibly make the leap to live after they've collected their FedEx Cup check. And so it's going to be hard. And I don't know how they keep some of these guys. You know, we've heard rumors about dozens of players. Some of them may be true. Some of them may have absolutely no basis in reality. But I can't imagine all of them are going to stay. So, you know, and you mentioned Bubba Watson. He's another guy we've heard for a long time. You know, Kokrak, when he left, he was a guy we'd heard about going for a long time. There's clearly, you know, some sparks where we've seen the smoke. So I think you're going to see a lot more people make the jump. And it's going to be interesting to see. You know, fortunately, only 48 of them can go. Let's just hope it's not the top 48.
Well, here's the other thing about this, and Scott Mishaw is joining us, Irish Examiner, Global Golf Post, here on the Adam Gold Show, is that while there's only 48 spots now, according to the what I have been able to read about how you become eligible for official World Golf Rankings points, those fields have to get bigger, and the tournaments have to go to full 72-hole events. Otherwise, as a tour, like, you could have one event where the fields are small and the length of the tournament is smaller, but ultimately your fields have to average, I think, 70 players in at least to qualify for OWGR points, and you've got to play 72-hole events. Are they ultimately going to change the format of those events?
I guess if they want to stay competitive in terms of getting their guys to play in major championships and get those world ranking points that are necessary, they might have to make those changes. It sort of diminishes the concept of what they've been trying to do as something different if you just become the same thing somewhere else with guaranteed money. Who knows? I think it's interesting that they're talking about doing it with the women.
Mm-hmm.
If they do that, how does the LPGA survive?
Can't.
Because if I'm the top women's player in the world, I'd jump at the money, because they're not making that money on the LPGA Tour. They are not making PGA Tour money, which is plenty good enough for most of these guys and should have been. But, you know, they could really make a splash by doing it with the women.
Yeah, Greg Norman said they're going to start a women's league, and if they do that, yes, all of the women will go, because it's play money to live. It's not based in anything. There's no reality to it. It doesn't matter. Which is why 3 years from now, what does live look like in relation to the PGA Tour?
Well, I hope it looks like a novelty act, and that maybe they get tired of it, but I'm afraid they won't. You know, they've got all the money to play with, and profit doesn't seem to be a motivator for them right at the moment. So it's pretty hard to compete with.
Impossible. It's impossible to compete with.
It is.
I mean, the only way the PGA Tour competes is by using history. I don't know if they'll be successful enough to use history to win this battle, but it is going to be interesting. And it does, for people like us who like to talk about golf and not just the players but the issues. It's going to give us a lot of stuff to do. Scott Mishaw, I hope you enjoyed your vacation while covering golf.
Thank you. I did.
All right, man. I'll talk
to
you soon.
I have to be home, though.
You got it. Scott Mishaw, the Irish Examiner, Global Golf Post. We're not the Live Tour, which, again, the third event starts tomorrow. It's not going away. It is not going away.
Over the crossbar, and the Hurricanes have won the Stanley Cup.
June 19, 2006, but it all started May 6, 1997 with the announcement that the Hartford Whalers were coming to North Carolina. It's a story of transition, of heartbreak, of figuring it out on the fly. The Canes Corner look at the 25th anniversary of the move. Presented by the Aluminum Company of North Carolina. Listen now. Find Canes 25th Anniversary wherever you get your podcast. Carolina Panthers open up the season against the Cleveland Browns. So Tuesday, with 32 days before, 32 business days, 32 show days.
Yes, business days.
Before we get to the start of the NFL season.
We are also factoring in Labor Day.
Right, absolutely. Yeah, it's not a business day.
Exactly.
Right? We decided we were going to do, Dennis did, decided, which is fine. I'm all about it.
Pawn it on me.
We decided that we were going to highlight, profile, not really a team, but the city that the Panthers are going up against. So it was Cleveland on Tuesday.
Yep.
Philadelphia yesterday, randomly. You picked it out of a hat. And today,
a cup, actually.
A cup. And today is East Rutherford, New Jersey, because the first road game is against the Giants, right?
It is.
So
I
that.
Think, maybe.
No, I don't know.
Okay. Shows you how much we know.
I don't know the schedule at all. I'm not. I don't do that. But well, let's do it. Let's profile the Giants.
It is at the Giants.
Look at
See?
That.
Look at us.
I know it was the reason we did it.
Yeah.
All right.
All right.
Where do you want to start?
Much like Cleveland, gotta go to the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, right? Got to do the big stuff that the city has to offer.
Okay. Yes.
Rock and Roll Hall of Fame: Philadelphia, Liberty Bell, Independence Hall, the Rocky Stairs. I don't know if it's
right.
an actual building for something else, but it's the Rocky Stairs. You got to do those things. So when you go
Museum
to
Museum of Art in Philadelphia with the Rocky statue. Yeah,
the Rocky Stairs. So when you go to East Rutherford, you got to do all the big stuff. Like
what?
That's it.
Yeah,
I got nothing. I mean, there are some things, but, you know, in terms of, like, big stuff in East Rutherford, New Jersey, what, look at the New York skyline?
There's nothing cultural in East Rutherford, New Jersey.
Exactly.
Okay. Now, this is where, full disclosure, I was born in Queens, New York. I grew up in Montclair, New Jersey, which is close, but not, that's not where East Rutherford is.
No, it's not.
But.
It's where Montclair is.
My dad's business. Mm-hmm. Has been in Rutherford, New Jersey, was. I mean, no longer a business. My dad is no longer. But so his business was in Rutherford for 40 years.
Okay.
I am completely familiar with that part of Bergen County, New Jersey.
Okay.
Completely familiar with that part of Bergen County, New Jersey. So what I would say is... Now, I don't believe they have this officially, but I do know that people have taken the Jimmy Hoffa tour.
Yes. that is something I wanted to bring up.
So, look, there's a landfill in Kearney.
Mm-hmm.
There's a river in Passaic. And there is, well, there was, because the Meadowlands is no longer with us. The football stadium, Giant Stadium.
Yeah.
The urban legend has it that... parts of Jimmy Hoffa were in Gate D.
Yeah.
I don't know which parts of Jimmy Hoffa, but either below the gate or in the cement pillar that supports Gate D.
Mm-hmm.
That's what urban legend says. So little bits and pieces of Jimmy Hoffa that they scattered for, well, posterity.
Reasons.
So there you go. Reasons, right.
Yeah, reasons.
So there you go. That is something to think about. You can do your own personal Jimmy Hoffa tour.
Yes.
Ask the locals. Hey, is part of Jimmy Hoffa here? And then we'll go, no, it's there.
Yep.
It's over there. They'll tell you exactly where it is.
So they'll point that out to you. But also while you're there, make sure you not only just live the American Dream, but go to American Dream, the indoor amusement park.
Dude, this was being built when I moved away.
Mm-hmm.
Now, it started out, and I believe... It might even be where the old Meadowlands was. I'm not sure. They were starting to build this while the Meadowlands was still there, while Giant Stadium was still there. It started, the first thing they had there was an indoor downhill skiing center. Process that.
Yeah.
Indoor downhill skiing.
I mean, they have indoor, was it like, basically like skydiving.
It is an incredible, American Dream is an incredible complex. So they have skiing. They have a giant water park. They have an amusement park. They have two different miniature putt-putt golf courses. One is blacklit, which is really cool. The other is just goofy. Mm-hmm. They've got ice skating. It is massive. They've got restaurants. So you could spend an entire week at this American Dream if you wanted to spend an entire week in East Rutherford. I would not suggest that.
I wouldn't suggest it either.
But the amusement park, American Dream, is massive.
But while you're there, if you are spending a week, go grab some food from either Uncle Tony's Deli or, as you mentioned to me, Candlewick Diner.
Let me just say this about New Jersey. New Jersey gets a bad rap for a lot of things. Mm-hmm. The one thing New Jersey leads Earth in, mm-hmm. Earth, other than bad smells, and I get it. Okay. I'm from there. You can't make the joke before I can. There is no place with better diners. No place on Earth with better diners than the state of New Jersey. The Candlewick Diner in East Rutherford, a must. Mm-hmm. A must. Where else can you go at 11 o'clock at night and get a 3-egg Spanish omelet?
Okay.
Or chicken parmesan.
There you go.
You can get that. And by the way, look in the dessert case, and there's like 15 different giant pies and cakes. It is the most amazing thing. They're open 20. They at least they were when I was a kid. Mm-hmm. Open 24 hours. Man, the Candlewick Diner is special. If you got lost and you were in Paramus along Route 4, the Forum Diner is special.
Okay.
Very good. Very good. New Jersey, by the way, also known for pasties, and we don't have to get into what those are. Some people will know. Some people will know what I just said.
I'm not one of those people,
no,
but
you're not.
Okay, I'm going to leave it at that.
Yeah.
I'm going to leave it at that. Well, you mentioned sweet treats from Candlewick.
Oh, you can get anything.
You want some good donuts. So make sure you're in Cleveland, you got to stop by Jack Frost Donuts.
Right.
In Philly, you got to go by Frangelli's.
Yeah.
Frangelli's Bakery.
Very
gotta good. Go to Top That Donuts in East Rutherford, New Jersey. Because if you don't go there, you got to go to a Dunkin'.
I think the
which why would you ever
no.
do that?
Look, Dunkin' Donuts in Jersey is that's where we went. Like that, we used to get coffee at 7-Eleven.
Well, yeah,
in
that's
Jersey.
Fine.
So, Top That Donuts is good. It's actually that's the second in a chain. It's not a chain. They opened up a second one. I think there was one at the Ocean, mm-hmm. right? East Rutherford, not at
on the
ocean.
Shore.
Yeah, at the shore, right? Mm-hmm. Not being a Jersey Shore person, I misidentified it. But yes, the Top That Donuts is very good. Personally, I think Dunkin' Donuts is great, so I would have gone there. Mm-hmm. But Uncle Tony's Deli, very good, old school deli on Patterson Avenue in East Rutherford. Candlewick Diner, just go there. Go there for every meal, every meal.
Not going to lie, the chicken parm sounds delicious right now.
You cannot go wrong at a good diner, and Candlewick is the best diner.
I love just a good diner. The brief year, it was a year that I lived in Wisconsin. There was a diner that was a cash-only spot right there on Marina because I lived right on Lake Michigan.
Mm-hmm.
Loved it. Cash-only, opening from 6 a.m. to 2 p.m. They used to breakfast and lunch, homemade bread every day. Wonderful.
Oh, homemade bread's important
every day.
Very
love that.
Very
place.
Important. See, that's what gets you in like the New York, New Jersey. You go up to Boston,
mm-hmm.
the bread's just different. It is different. I don't know if it's water. I don't know if it's air. I don't know. It's not know-how. There's smart people here.
Yeah,
just different.
You haven't had my focaccia yet. That's all I'm gonna say.
I have not had your focaccia.
No.
But I'm interested now.
I gotta make some and bring some in.
There you go.
We should taste it on air. I'm dead serious.
We're gonna,
I'll put some sweet peppers and onions on it.
There's a segment right there. We're going to taste Dennis's focaccia. All right, let's do a rewind. Oh, man. I had probably a little bit too much fun in that segment.
I know you did.
I had just a little bit too
much
fun.
Oh, by the way, we were doing the Colts tomorrow.
Oh, yes.
So we're doing Indianapolis. And I'm actually going to go ahead and draw for Monday.
Okay, let's hear it.
I'm going to go ahead and draw for Monday. And my cup, this Dunkin' Donuts coffee cup that's
fresh and clean.
See,
you're knocking Dunkin' Donuts here.
Yeah, but here's
the
thing. This is what it's good for is this. No, well, that's all it's good for.
No, Dunkin' Donuts coffee. Well, you don't like coffee. Dunkin' Donuts coffee is very good.
Monday, the Bucks.
Tampa. Oh, I know where we're going. I know where we're going on Monday.
There we go.
This is the Adam Gold Show.
Over the crossbar, and the Hurricanes have won the Stanley Cup.
June 19th, 2006. But it all started May 6th, 1997 with the announcement that the Hartford Whalers were coming to North Carolina. It's a story of transition, of heartbreak, of figuring it out on the fly. The Canes Corner look at the 25th anniversary of the move. Presented by the Aluminum Company of North Carolina. Listen now. Find Canes 25th Anniversary wherever you get your podcasts.